There's a book called Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment. So the subtitle is How the 18th Century Church Stood for Liberty and Why It Must Do So Again. The author is Dan Fisher of Oklahoma, and he joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dan, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Jerry, it's an honor to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. Now, there's a quote I'm familiar with that you have in your book, and it gets back to a book written in 1860 by John Wingate Thornton, but he said that this. He said, quote, "To the pulpit, the Puritan pulpit, we owe the moral force which won our independence." Tell us about the so-called black-robed regiment, and you can feel free to comment on that quote itself if you want.
Sure. Well, what he is saying is exactly right. In fact,
get right into the phone. Get right into the phone, if you would.
Yeah, I'm in it here.
Oh, okay, great.
Is that better?
Yes, absolutely. Go on.
Okay. Yeah, well, he is completely correct. Had it not been for the pastors of the 18th century, I don't think there would have been a war of independence. But the Black Robe Regiment were the preachers who engaged the culture using scripture, and the title was actually pinned on them by the British, referring to the black robes that they all wore in those days. And they were trying to squelch these guys and doing everything they could do to stop them as they were busy pinning the flames of liberty.
Hmm. And in your book, I know you've got examples of Peter John Muhlenberg. He's probably the best known of them all. And in fact, isn't it fair to say that in some ways the character in the movie The Patriot by Mel Gibson of the preacher was patterned after Peter John Gabriel Muhlenberg? Why don't you tell us that story?
Yeah, that's John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg, and they just called him Peter Muhlenberg. Yeah, the only difference in the story, The Patriot, which is an excellent movie in my opinion, yes, the only difference is rather than Heath Ledger's character recruiting the men to go to fight, it would have been the preacher. In that particular scene, the preacher's a little bit reluctant and then finally goes off to fight. In Peter Muhlenberg's particular instance, he served in the Virginia House of Burgesses with George Washington, Patrick Henry, and they were the ones who recommended him to be commissioned as a colonel to raise the 8th Virginia Regiment. And so he actually does, on January the 21st, 1776, he preaches his final sermon as pastor of his church in Woodstock, Virginia, and recruits the men of his church and community and leads them off to fight, leads them through the entire war from 76 to 83. And today his statue is in Statuary Hall in the nation's capital. And he's even in the surrender painting where Cornwallis is surrendering to Washington. Muhlenberg is seated on one of the horses there in the painting in the National Rotunda.
Right. Wow. Right there at Yorktown, 1781.
Yes.
One thing I don't understand, he was from Virginia, and yet, as I recall, in the Statuary Hall, somehow it represents Pennsylvania. And that's one of those kind of questions I forgot to ask David Barton or whatever.
Sure.
You know. Do you know the answer?
Oh, you bet. Yeah,
oh.
He's from Pennsylvania. His father, Henry Muhlenberg, helped to found the Lutheran Church in Pennsylvania. So Peter was from Pennsylvania, but then went down into Virginia to preach. And that's how he ends up in Woodstock, Virginia. Now, he was a Lutheran, but had to be ordained as an Anglican, because in those days, if you wanted to pastor a church, you had to be licensed as an Anglican in Virginia. So, yeah, he was a Lutheran and from Pennsylvania originally.
By the way, speaking of the idea of a minister being involved in politics, I'm sure you're familiar with the contrast with his brother Augustus. And if you are,
Frederick.
Can you tell that story? Was it Frederick Augustus?
Yeah, it was Frederick Augustus. Frederick was, of course, Peter Muhlenberg's brother, and Frederick said,
"Okay, wait. Now your phone is bad. Your phone is get back to where you were." At the better spot.
Yeah, I'm right. I never moved. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. Go on.
Yeah, Frederick Muhlenberg was Peter's brother, and Frederick said that being involved in politics and war was beneath a man of the cloth, and really was criticizing Peter, his brother. So Peter Muhlenberg sends off a letter and tells him, man, it's his duty under God and to his fellow man and to his country Interestingly, Frederick eventually has a change of heart when the British come into New York City, where he pastored. Frederick pastored in New York and started burning and desecrating the churches. And so Frederick joins the Continental Congress and then becomes the speaker or a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. And then he became the first speaker of the House of the United States of America. Wow. And is one of the original signers on the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
So huge turnaround for Frederick.
Yeah. Wow. That is an amazing story of different contrast. Along those lines, there are a lot of preachers today that can't even, they wouldn't even think about doing what those preachers did during their founding era. And by the way, most of these preachers we're talking about, most of them, the majority, would be from New England, as I understand it. That's why that quote about the Puritan pulpit applies, because the Puritans are the ones who created New England.
Yeah, but you know, Jerry, as it turns out, there were preachers up and down the colonies eventually that joined in the effort. And yeah, these guys saw no
conflict.
They had no hesitancy, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
in mixing their Christian beliefs with their political stand. See, they didn't compartmentalize their lives into the spiritual and the sacred and the secular as we do today.
Yeah.
But today we compartmentalize our lives, and so we say, oh, we can't mix our Christianity with our politics.
Yeah.
And of course, then the results are predictable.
Yeah, that. In fact, when you word it that way, I can't help but think of the old classic example where President Carter, on the one hand, he personally claimed to be born again and so forth, and even made that term popular. And when he was asked about abortion, he would say, well, personally, I'm opposed to abortion, but who am I to impose my views, you know, on a woman? Of course, if you know, what if somebody said that very same argument in reference to slavery? We would say, oh, well, that was wrong. That's bad. You know, anyway.
Sure.
They
practice selective outrage and selective piety. It's just when it's convenient, when it's inconvenient, they just stay silent.
Sure. Now, your book has many different examples of, you know, some really important parsons through the years, especially during the time of independence. Probably, you know, one of the greatest of them all would be John Witherspoon, the president of Princeton, who was ultimately from Scotland. And this Presbyterian parson, it was said of him in Parliament, "Cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson." Tell us about that quote, and what does it mean, and how was Witherspoon so influential?
Yeah, well, that quote came from the son of the British Prime Minister. His name was Horace Walpole, and that's what he said to Parliament. And he was referring to the fact that the preachers, this black regiment, we call them the black-robed regiment, were having such a major impact in the fight for independence. And so basically he's saying that they have duped the American public and they've run off with a Presbyterian parson, because the Presbyterians in those days were some of the more fiery preachers. And of course, Witherspoon was one of those. But Witherspoon was also part of the collection of founding fathers who wrote and voted for and declared our independence. They wrote the Declaration of Independence. In fact, he gave a rousing speech when the delegates were getting a little weak-kneed, and helped to kind of push them over and help them to vote for independence, which of course then led to the war. So they were blaming these preachers. They knew who the primary fanners of the flames were, and it was the preachers, and they knew it, so that's why they targeted them.
You said in your book that, and it's hard for me to pronounce this guy's name, but you gave him as an example that sometimes when the British would surround these people and capture, let's say, the ministers, you give an instance where the guy surrendered and they killed him anyway, which I hope was not
John
the general
Rossbrug.
Policy. Yeah, but tell us about that.
Yeah, that was John Rossbrug from New Jersey. He didn't immediately go off to war because he was 63. But after the British kind of routed the Americans at the Battle of Long Island, New York, he rallies the men of his church, and they say, "We'll go to fight if you'll lead us." And he leads them off, and they're part of the Battle of Trenton, New Jersey campaign. And then in the second Battle of Trenton, he's separated from the Americans by a creek, and he's afraid to cross in the daylight because the British, if they captured these pastors, would either throw them in a prison ship where they died a terrible death, or they'd just execute them on the spot. So finally, he is trying to make his way to safety. He's captured by a group of Hessians led by a British officer. And while he's trying to surrender, they bayonet him to death. Oh, wow. So he was killed, literally murdered, while trying to surrender to the British forces.
Wow. Tell us the story about Give 'em Watts, boys.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's another Presbyterian. Now, there preachers from all of the denominations were involved, Baptists, Presbyterians, Lutherans. But the Presbyterian James Caldwell was out of Elizabethtown, New Jersey. And he was the one who, at the battle, was his men of Springfield, New Jersey, is where they were fighting. They had run out of, not ammunition, but wadding for their muskets. So he runs down to the First Presbyterian Church there in Springfield and gets hymn books filled with Isaac Watts hymns and takes them back and throws them out to his men and says, use the pages in these hymns for wadding. And so they're using Isaac Watts hymns, stuffing them down their barrels and firing away at the British. And while they're doing that, he's yelling, give them Watts, boys, put Watts into them.
Yeah.
And that's the famous preacher, James Caldwell.
And just so people know, that's spelled W-A-T-T-S. Watts, Isaac Watts, you know, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, Jesus Shall Reign, some of the greatest hymns. In fact, I remember one time, and just a quick aside, there was a study where it showed that Isaac Watts was the one who helped transition from just using psalms and psalms alone to using worshipful words,
yes,
creating hymns. So he's almost, you know, there's a very strong sense in which he fits, you know, the whole history of hymns. What else would you like to say that is brought out in your book? Maybe Jonas Clark. We haven't mentioned him. Who was he?
Well, yeah, see, Jonas Clark. Yeah, Jonas Clark is key because he was the pastor of the church in Lexington, Massachusetts, and he helped to train the famous Lexington Minutemen, and he helped to lead them to take their stand against the British at the Battle of Lexington on April the 19th, 1775, which is technically the first real clash with the British.
Yes.
And, most people don't even know that the initial clash at the Battle of Lexington and then Concord later on that day, those Americans were led by a preacher and a deacon by the name of John Parker. So Jonas Clark pastors the church there in Lexington. In fact, John Hancock's grandfather had pastored that very same church a number of years before. So that church had an amazing history of great preachers. And most people don't realize that when Paul Revere was making his midnight ride, that night when he rides into Lexington, he rides to Preacher Clark's house because John Hancock and Samuel Adams are staying with Pastor Clark that mm-hmm. night. So there's all kinds of history that most of us do not know. And that was the purpose of the book, to reacquaint us with the heritage that we have as the church and the role that preachers and their congregants played in earning our independence.
Hmm. And it was a very substantial one. Any comments about Jonathan Mayhew?
Oh, Jonathan Mayhew, of course, was one of the great preachers that came out of the First Great Awakening. And he and Jonathan Edwards and George Whitfield and all of those guys, I would call them the forerunners to the actual Black Robe Regiment. And many of the Black Robe guys were young men during that First Great Awakening, so they grew up under that atmosphere of this massive revival, so that when the fight with the British came, these guys were poised and ready to go. And then some of those original preachers out of that First Great Awakening were still living, and so they gave their support to this great effort of independence. Because, see, they knew, Jerry, that if they ultimately were not successful, they would have the Anglican Church, the Church of England, forced upon them, and many of these men would either be jailed or executed or whatever, be driven out of New England or out of the colony.
It would undermine the whole reason that that these people sacrificed everything, their forebears,
exactly,
had sacrificed
right.
everything to start this country and to start those different colonies. All right, we're basically
That's
out of
exactly
time.
Right.
Dan Fisher, BRR, as in Black Robe Regiment, BrRR.com for more information. Dan Fisher, BRR.com. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Jerry, thank you so much. God bless you and all that you do.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye now.